number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Wound studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, I rarely lead off a show with hockey. I normally don't. But wow, Dennis Weidman slamming his stick into the back of that official. Is this assault?
Yeah, you can't do that.
Or is this, he was so dazed and confused he didn't even know what was going on? I saw this video last night, and this is what I had to do. I watched it out of the corner of my eye as I was doing the show. I saw the highlight, and I said, don't comment until you know exactly what the hell this story is. Don't just go off because you saw it on TV without any context. So I waited after the show. I did a little research, started. Oh, my God. He just took a stick and slammed it into the back of an official on the ice. And the guy went, boom. And he's been suspended indefinitely, which means we don't even know how long he's going to be out. We don't even know what to do here. We just know this. We're not putting a timetable on this because this could be a long time. What in God's name is he doing?
I have no idea. If he plays this year, I will be shocked.
I let me say this. I watched it and I went back over it. I was like rewinding it because I was trying to find something like, as I heard there was a concept of, and again, please forgive me for not knowing the full details of hockey, but there's a crowding of the box situation that I've heard where players who are trying to get off the ice will sometimes pull their sticks up and they just don't stop and they just run into, they just may run into another player or whatnot trying to get back. But I watched this over. I couldn't see that. No. I saw a guy skate, lift stick, jam, fall. The guy falls to the ice.
Yes.
That's all I saw.
100%. That's
exactly right, right?
He wants. Anybody else can say whatever they want. That was a deliberate act.
Deliberate act.
Assault, like you called it.
Assault. And this is going to bring me to a larger question. And for those of you who are kind of going, yeah, hockey, I don't know anything about hockey, et cetera. I want you, let's carry this further. Let's carry this into Major League Baseball. Let's carry this into the NFL. Let's carry this into the NBA. Okay. Because we had this incident with Blake Griffin as well, but that was on the street. That was in a restaurant on the street. I'm talking about in the arena, on the ice, on the court, on the field. When you have a situation like that, do we want, now think, just think about this. Do we want police to come in and issue charges of assault in those kind of situations? Do we want the field, the court, the ice to be also a place where we are having players in locker rooms getting pulled out of locker rooms by cops who are saying that's assault and we're pressing charges? I don't necessarily want that to be that way, but when I saw this, I went, there has to be a ramification for this. That's beyond Gary Bettman suspending him for 10 games or 15 games. This guy got blindsided by an NHL player with a stick and he fell to the ice. And I'm telling you, that looked painful. And I don't know, did he suffer any injuries? I did not hear
about any injuries. I just know he was down on the ice for a long time, and he looked like he was in a lot of pain.
A lot of pain. And I mean, really? I mean, do you give up your rights as a human being because you wear a uniform, an official's uniform? I mean, do you give up that?
I think when you go outside the actual game, you know, like the officials have, you're not hitting an official. No sport allows you to hit an official,
right?
Except for WWE, and that's all scripted, we know. So the fact is, like, no sport. We don't see, you know, referees being pushed in, you know, NFL or NBA. We see it overseas in soccer a lot, and that kind of stuff happens. These players are charged. These players, you know, there's
right.
ramifications.
Yeah, exactly, sure.
So, in my opinion, if you go over the line with something like this, then yes, I think you can. If we see a player take his helmet off and hit an official in the back as hard as he can with it, that's assault. If we see a baseball player take a bat to an umpire, that's assault. Like, that's
right.
Essentially
that's
what he did.
That's right. That would be the case. And I think in this situation, that has to happen. Now, again, I think this game, was this game in Calgary? Because this was Calgary Predators. This game was in Calgary.
Yes.
So I don't know how the Canadian authorities work on this kind of thing. I'm assuming they have assault laws or whatnot. I can't imagine they don't, but I'm not an expert in Canadian law, so forgive me. But in this country, I know we do. And again, you're right. What if an NFL player took his helmet and swung it and hit an official in the head? Would you just say, well, you know, the commissioner's got to act on this? Or would you say, no, call the police? Because if you saw the same thing in a hotel or a bar or in a city park, you'd call the police. And yet, we have a tendency to live in a sports bubble where we don't want that to take place. I remember having an argument on air at the time, years ago, over 10 years ago. There was a hockey player by the name of Steve Moore who played for the Colorado Avalanche. And he was involved in a retaliatory response by Todd Bertuzzi of the Vancouver Canucks. And what had happened was Moore had hit Marcus Naslund in a game. And when the Avalanche went to Vancouver, there was a bounty. You know, there was conversations about he's going to get his and all that. Moore was on the ice. Bertuzzi tracked him down. Bertuzzi was bigger than Moore, jumped on his back, drove him into the ground. Moore suffered a neck injury, had to be carried off in a stretcher. And I remember having this kind of on-air conversation with a co-host of mine. And we were talking about whether or not Todd Bertuzzi should go to jail. And I said, you know, I hate to be the guy that says no to something like this, but when two athletes are in the competition ring, if you will, field, rink, court, whatever, I said we kind of suspend these assault rules. If two baseball players are duking it out, well, they wouldn't be allowed to do that at a restaurant. They would not be allowed to do that in a parking lot. They would not be allowed to do that in any other location. But if they do that on a baseball diamond, no, there isn't charges. There isn't, that no one gets charged with assault. Just two guys duking it out, even if one gets seriously hurt. Same thing in football. Same thing in basketball. We just don't do that. This, I think, is different. This is an official. This is a defenseless official who is physically not in the same level as a professional hockey player, a professional athlete. And for whatever reason, Dennis Weidman decided that the best thing to do with his stick was to jam it into the back of a defenseless official. The back of a defenseless official, which makes this even worse. Because I was taught as a kid, and I don't fight very much, you don't hit somebody in the back. You want to fight somebody, you do it to their face. So this is a cheap shot. It's a loser move. It's criminal. And this can't be just on the shoulders of Gary Bettman. So again, I don't know what they do in Canada, but this to me has to be solved also judiciously. If I'm Gary Bettman, I suspend him for a very long time. And I'd ask, I don't think you can suspend some guy permanently, because that requires a union vote or a union approval to give you that kind of power. But boy, I'll tell you right now, this is something you have to make a move on that is so strong it prevents this from ever happening again.
My opinion, it should be the rest of this season and next season, with the possibility of like some sort of, you know, meeting, you know, a quarter of the way through next year to see if he can come back halfway through the season. Basically,
absolutely.
So he's gone a full season no matter what. And then possibly if he shows no remorse or, you know, he doesn't get his act together, you know, take classes, whatever they stipulate, then he's gone the rest of the year as well.
And here's the other thing, too. And I know here's hockey fans in particular. I appreciate your hockey culture, and I appreciate sort of the world you want to live in that's so different from anything else. I hear this all the time. You know, well, we don't do that kind of thing in hockey, or in hockey, it's a hockey thing. You wouldn't get it. I don't want to hear that in this situation. I don't want to hear this in this situation. I don't care. This was, to me, assault. If two hockey players are duking it out, do you remember Marty McSorley got hit? He got hit with a stick? He hit somebody with a stick, right?
Yes.
Was it Donald Brashear?
Yes, I believe so. That sounds all, right in my head.
All
yes.
my memory banks. But this was like 2000, 2001 or something like that. I remember whatever it was. I mean, it was just a stick slam in the head. Look, two hockey players, if you want to go down the road, it's a hockey thing, you wouldn't get it. Okay, I do get it. On this, no chance. Because let me tell you, hockey fan, if you believe that, if you watched baseball and saw a baseball player take a bat and shove an umpire with it or hit an umpire with it, you wouldn't want to hear us say it's a baseball thing.
He was convicted of assault with a deadly weapon, and that was in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Marty McSorley was.
Very, very good. So that should happen here. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 800-777-2907. If you want to comment on what we were just talking about, if you assault an official or an umpire, should it be assault? Should it be a criminal charge? What about a criminal charge if two players assault each other, or you get a cheap shot on a player or whatnot? I don't know if we want to go down that road, but the Dennis Weidman hit on the NHL official seems like assault to me. All right, Dan Feldman is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. NBC Sports, talk some NBA, ask him about Blake Griffin, who this week also was involved in a punch of an equipment manager. We'll get his thoughts on the Clippers, get his thoughts on the NBA. LeBron James, is he really a coach killer? All those issues coming up at the bottom of the hour. The Oakland Raiders, there was a story about the Oakland Raiders possibly moving to Las Vegas. Oh, I love Vegas relocation stories. Little background, I spent 3 years of my career in Las Vegas in my late 20s. I loved living in Vegas. My wife and I had just gotten married. We were single. We didn't have kids. So we really got to enjoy living in Vegas. I put on a tremendous amount of weight while I lived there because everything was buffet. I mean, that's all you got when I worked there. I mean, buffet. Hey, you want to go to a buffet? Oh, I just put on so much weight. But I loved living there, and I got to know the people, and I covered a lot of teams, minor league basketball, minor league hockey, minor league indoor hockey, minor league baseball, the UNLV Rebels football and basketball. And I talked to people all the time about whether or not the city was viable for a professional team. It all came down to one thing. It came down to professional sports and its relationship to Vegas in terms of gambling. And that's why there is no professional team there, because a couple of things have to happen. Either one, the casinos have to give up gambling on a particular sport to satisfy the need of the league or whatever entity that's trying to move there, or the sports entity that's trying to move there gives up its desire to be in a state or city that allows professional gambling. So It's a really, really tricky slope for the NFL, because as gambling is progressing and multiplying across the country, as casinos keep popping up, there has been more push in a lot of states that have casino gambling to get into sportsbook. And if you do that in certain states, then you're going to set the precedent for Vegas. Because if you, let's say you allow sports betting in New Jersey, what do you do with the Giants and the Jets? If you allow sports, legalize sports betting in whatever state it is, it could be Florida or whatever, what do you do with those teams in that city? So it's kind of a tricky situation with the NFL to be in, and that's why they're very opposed. They are vocally opposed whenever a state is trying to put legalized sports betting in the legalizing the state for tax revenue purposes. So I lived in Vegas and I would hear things like there's going to be an NBA team or there's going to be an NHL team or there. I always went, well, I need to see what happens first with the casinos before I believe it, because the casinos are the powerful entity in that city. As far as population wise, I think it works. As far as location, I think it's pretty cool. I hope that one day that city does get a professional franchise. I still love Las Vegas. I haven't lived there in a very long time, but I love that city. And some of the best memories I have are in that city. But I hope they do eventually get it. I hope they do eventually get a professional sports team. Are they going to get the Raiders? Probably not. a lot of this conversation about, well, there's, you know, the hotel, you know, one hotel casino is going to build a stadium, a $1 billion stadium. That's where UNLV and this new NFL team will play and all that kind of stuff. I think this is still posturing on the Raiders' part. I don't think that the NFL is very interested in revisiting whether their stance on casino, you know, sports betting. I don't think they're going to revisit that to allow the Raiders to move to Vegas, and the casinos in Vegas sure as hell ain't going to give up taking bets on NFL games. But my thing is, if I'm the NFL, I need to start evaluating this maybe in a different light. It's kind of like marijuana. I was watching Real Sports, and they were talking about Colorado and the pot laws in Colorado, and Andrea Kramer was out there doing a story, and she was talking to Nate Jackson, and basically talking about how a lot of players do use marijuana, even though it's illegal, even though it's against the drug policy of the NFL. They use it to medicate themselves off injuries and whatnot. You know, it's just a whole story along those lines. But you guys know, if you've listened to the show long enough, and my stance on the NFL's drug policy with marijuana in particular is I think the league needs to start softening up their stance on this. Still state that if you live in a state or live in an area that marijuana is illegal, you could be punished for doing an illegal act if you're caught doing it. But just because you're caught with marijuana in your system, we're not gonna throw the book at you. But if you're in Indiana and you get arrested for pot, you could still be suspended for that. It does create an unfair playing field for those players who live in Colorado and those who don't. But I think the NFL could make a stand on this. And I think legalized gambling in the same way, it doesn't open up that market to them. And they are going to be trapped if sports betting does get legal in states where they have teams. And I think it's only a matter of when, not if. And the NFL can lobby all at once, but they're not going to take the Steelers and Eagles out of Pennsylvania if all of a sudden Pennsylvania says we're going to legalize sports betting. They're just not going to do it. And if they're not going to do that, then how do they keep a team out of Las Vegas from a franchise that may want to move there and try that market? People in Vegas are, a lot of people from Vegas lived somewhere else. A lot of New York transplants and whatnot. There's a lot of loyalties in that city. I one of the things that I loved about living in Vegas, and I ran a sports station. I was young and I was running a sports station, and we were looking for sports teams to carry on our station. We wanted to be the Vegas a flagship or affiliate for certain teams. We had our pick. I mean, we could take Phoenix teams, we could take LA teams, we took the Oakland Raiders, the New York Yankees were on the radio in Vegas at the time. I mean, it was just because people were from somewhere else, and you could really exploit that. But I always thought that the city would really unify with a professional team of their own. I mean, I carried my own sports biases to the city of Las Vegas. When I was a kid, I was still a fan of the Steelers and the Celtics and whatnot, but I would have definitely rallied around an NFL team, definitely rallied around an NBA team or an NHL team if they resided in that city at the time I was living there. Absolutely, I would have. I wouldn't have not gone because I liked another team. I would have definitely gone. I would have definitely enjoyed it. But one of the things, and I'll make this quick, those of you who live in Vegas and listen to us out there, you know this, that if you're going to try to stop guys fixing games, if you're going to try to stop people from getting influenced by gamblers who try to manipulate the outcome of a game, one of the best ways to do that is to have legalized betting, because nobody monitors that kind of stuff better than a Vegas sports book. If you start seeing money really pour on to one side, it does raise red flags. And in some cases, those guys know so much about how a game should be bet and what's really the proper amount of money that should be bet on both sides, that any discrepancy that's that noticeable does get red flagged. In fact, people who look into it, the FBI and whatnot, who look into these kind of things, have used Vegas a number of times to get their input on whether or not a game was fixed or not on the up and up. And it's Vegas is the one that says, we know this better than anybody else. Give them a team.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Oh, glad you could be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Man, what an interesting week it's been for the NBA. Remember Monday when the Golden State Warriors just ripped the San Antonio Spurs apart? And then we had the Blake Griffin incident in Toronto, and he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks because he punched an equipment manager. We also had the Cleveland Cavaliers a week ago firing David Blatt, and then LeBron James answering the criticisms of being a coach killer. Oh, my goodness. Where is this league heading? We'll be joined by Dan Feldman in just a little bit from NBC Sports. We'll get his take on it. 800-777-2907. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter at Tony D Radio. We'll keep you updated on all our podcasts and whatnot. And also our Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Love to have you there. Dan Feldman joins us on a Progressive Insurance Hotline. How are you, Dan?
Good. How are you?
Good. All right. So I was just saying, what a really interesting week for the NBA. Let's start with Monday. Let's start with the Golden State Warriors kind of tearing apart the San Antonio Spurs. Were you really surprised by that?
I was surprised by how big the margin was. I thought the Warriors would win. They have more to play for right now. Both teams are playing for something. You know, the number one seed matters. Having home court advantage if they meet in the conference finals matters. I think more importantly, not having to play the Thunder in the second round matters. But the Warriors are also chasing 72 wins, a chance at the best record in NBA history. You know, they're in it for something. The Spurs, we've seen over the years, they don't really put it all, they're all into these regular season games.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if you're San Antonio and you go to, you know, in your mind to the places you don't release to the media, but in the back of mind, do you think that they were like, we got a lot of work to do, or you know what, they just got us on this night and we just kind of, it's just one of those things, or because I was wondering, what did this win really say about these two teams?
I think the Spurs don't want to think about that question because the answer might be we have a lot of work to do. And I don't know if we can do it in time. So I think their mindset is this was one game. We're not going to overthink it because if we do, we might not like the answer.
Dan Feldman joins us, NBC Sports. The situation with Blake Griffin, let me get your thoughts on him for a second. Is he a guy that this kind of thing, by getting in an altercation, has he been known to do these kind of things before?
That's what's tricky. We have a certain image of these guys. We see him in commercials. We have a perception of him as maybe a little funny, a little goofy, maybe a little afraid to get into these altercations on the court. That's his reputation, but we don't really know. I mean, he spends most of his life outside the public image. He has, you know, private dinners with teammates and friends and equipment managers, and we don't know what happens. We don't know if this is out of character. We just don't know.
If you're Doc Rivers, how do you approach this? I mean, how do you handle this? Because it seems to me that this is something that if you're Doc Rivers or you're the management of the LA Clippers, that you have to deal with on a business level, not just a basketball level. This was an employee altercation.
Absolutely. Number one thing is you have to talk with lawyers and figure out how to protect yourself from a lawsuit. You know, that's got to be their biggest worry. You also have to involve HR and as far as how to bring these guys back. It's absolutely a business thing before a basketball thing first. And it seems the Clippers are handling it the right way. I'd applaud them for everything they've said, and everything Blake Griffin has said has jibed with any anonymous reports that have come out. So, you know, they haven't been caught lying about anything. They were on top of it. They addressed it immediately. It seems like they're doing the best they can with what's a bad situation will be a bad situation, but they're not making it worse.
In these kind of situations, and I know we haven't seen anything like this, but in these kind of situations where there is an embarrassing moment for a player representing a team, is it better for the team to sort of say, we're going to lay down some discipline, or do you put hands off and let the NBA deal with it?
I don't really think it matters because, for the most part, the team and the NBA are probably working together.
Okay.
You know, I think they're deciding, hey, you know, who's going to handle it, what would look better. And maybe I think, you know, maybe it would look better coming from the team, especially because he was allegedly punching a team employee. But, you know, if the Clippers didn't do a good enough job, the NBA would step in. So I think they both have a vested interest in making sure that this gets handled in a way that appeases the public.
Dan Feldman joining us from NBC Sports, talking some NBA. Dan, I'm a real simple guy. I don't get into analytics, and I don't like to break down the nuances of guys on the court and what possessions and all that, all the statistics say. But with the LA Clippers performing well with him not on the court, is it conceivable that they may put him on the trading block? Because to me, the simple-minded me would say, he's one of the best players in the league, and he probably is helping you if he's on the court.
He's one of the best players in the league, and he's helping you when he's on the court, yes. But is he a perfect fit? No. I mean, he's a power forward who's neither a great defender nor a three-point shooter who can space the floor. That's tough to work with. He does a lot of great things beyond that, but it's just not the simplest fit. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, you're better off putting your best talent on the floor, and if they're smart, and I think Blake and Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan are smart players, I think Doc Rivers is a smart coach, they'll make it work. But I also do think it makes some sense to explore a trade, just because maybe you can get him in a situation where he is a better fit, another team values him as a better fit, and would give you pieces that are both talented and fit with you. So I do think it makes sense to look at, but I also think it's hard to get fair return on a star like that.
If they do put him on the trade block, should it be a basketball thing, or should it, or could it be a, we don't want this guy on our team anymore because of what happened?
I think it should be a basketball thing. I mean, it seems like everybody is ready to move on, and that's probably best for everybody. And there is a basketball case to trade him. I really don't see him having a problem with the team dynamic in the long run.
Dan Feldman joins us, NBC Sports, on the NBA. LeBron James, I'll basically ask you this. Coach Killer or not? I mean, this is we've had this going on for all week.
Well, I think Coach Killer is sort of a strange label. I mean, LeBron is an incredibly smart basketball player, and sometimes he might make himself look bad by being the one to point that out, but he's right. So, you know, you can call him arrogant, that's fine, but he is right. He's a high IQ, one of the smartest players we've seen. And I think he, at different points in his career, has known some things his coaches didn't. So does that make him a coach killer? You know, I don't know if that's a fair label. I think a lot of people need to reevaluate how they see the role of a coach. The coach is not the team leader, the boss, the guy in charge. He's part of the team that's trying to win. You know, he's a piece, he's a cog, but the star player is really the one in charge. You know, I think maybe the question should be framed as, you know, hey, was Blatt a superstar killer? Was he doing all he could to support LeBron and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, guys who are more important to the organization than the coach?
Yeah, because I look at LeBron and I say, okay, well, what kind of coach would LeBron like? And it seems to me that with Tyronn Lue, he really likes guys who understand what it's like to be a player in this league. Is that accurate?
I'm sure he likes that. I think more than anything, he'd like a good coach, a coach who can put players in position to succeed. And in some ways, that was Blatt. So I think there's more to it than just that, but I think that's the number one thing. But I also don't think LeBron cares that much about the coach. And you can listen to him talk about various things over the years, and he talks about who's important to winning. And he's always talking about his teammates and, you know, he rarely puts a coach in that, if ever, puts a coach in that group of the most important guys to a team.
Talking about a team that may have to have some work to do, I worry about Cleveland and this return to the Cavaliers by LeBron that may not result in a championship based on how good the two teams in the West are. Does Cleveland have some work to do, or are they capable of winning a title against either the Spurs or the Warriors?
I think they're capable, but they're big underdogs. The Warriors and Spurs are two of the greatest teams we've ever seen. The Cavs are just kind of stuck in playing in the wrong time. There'd be some years where they'd be the best team in the league. That's not this year, but they are good enough. They're, I think, the best team in the East. I think they're going to get to the finals, and once you get there, you know, maybe fortune breaks on your side.
Dan Feldman, great stuff as always. Appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. NBC Sports, Dan Feldman on the NBA. Well, like I said, busy week. Blake Griffin, David Blatt, the beatdown of the Spurs. I have to say this about the Spurs. I love the way they responded, right? They go to Oakland, they get destroyed, and then they go, what are you going to do, right? Go back to San Antonio and whip up the Rockets for 30 points. Well done, San Antonio. 25-0 at home this year. Coming up, Super Bowl flashback number two this date in history, and one that has a very, very important meaning to me that I still haven't gotten over. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, we go back in time. Super Bowl flashback. This date in history. I had three today. Yeah, during the week I only had one per night, but I got three today. Three Super Bowls that were played on January 28th. I know some of us are January 29th now as we cross the midnight hour, but some of you are still on the 28th. Those of you are on the West Coast. So three Super Bowls were played on January 28th, and we talked about one of them, Super Bowl 24, between the San Francisco 49ers and the Denver Broncos. This next one, for those of you in the Dallas area, this was the last Super Bowl champion for the Dallas Cowboys. It occurred on this date in 1996 at Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe, Arizona, where the Dallas Cowboys beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 27-17 in a game this Steeler fan is still bothered by to this day. Because the Pittsburgh Steelers had found a way to win a game that they were kind of getting beat up in. It was 13-7 at halftime, but Dallas was had really started out very strong and looked like they were going to cruise to yet another Super Bowl victory. But the Steelers really fought back in this one, really fought back. And when they had an opportunity, they had an onside kick that worked to perfection. They had a touchdown pass from Cordell Stewart. Neil O'Donnell was the quarterback. And this is the infamous game in which he threw two interceptions to Larry Brown. Now, Adam, I don't know about you, but I watch a lot of those NFL, you know how NFL films will recap all the Super Bowls like one after another, like Super Bowl Saturday and Sunday.
Right. Yeah.
So I like to catch those. I like to watch them. And whenever we get to Super Bowl 30, I watch it hoping that the result will be different, right? Like I watch them going, I know I'm going to watch a Neil O'Donnell interception, but maybe this is the one where in an alternate Twilight Zone-like universe, Neil O'Donnell doesn't throw it to a wide open Larry Brown and instead, I don't know, completes the pass to a Pittsburgh Steeler. But it never turns out that way. Never. It always turns into Neil O'Donnell throwing interceptions to a wide open Larry Brown, handing Larry Brown the MVP. It never occurs. But the thing that bothered me the most about this game was, first of all, Dallas was really, really good. Dallas was really good. But what really bothered me about this game was there was a moment where the Steelers were really trying. They were really doing well getting back into the game. Like I said, they had a successful onside kick. Deion Figures recovered the ball, and O'Donnell started moving the ball down the field. But here's the thing. They had Bam Morris at the running back position, and he was really starting to just gain ground. They were really attacking that tough Dallas defense. They were driving and making them tired. And for whatever reason, again, they decide to go to the air. And that's when I went, oh my God. And the second interception that kind of sealed this win is Dallas were able to move down the field, get an Emmitt Smith touchdown, and ended up getting a 27-17 victory. It was the first Pittsburgh Steeler loss in the Super Bowl. They had won the previous four they were in, and it gave Dallas three Super Bowls in 4 years, and it also gave Barry Switzer his first Super Bowl title. So again, on this date, 1996, 20 years ago. Now, how old are you, Adam? You were just a kid when this one
30.
Was going down.
So I was 10. 10. I remember this game. I remember watching this game.
Yeah. Oh, it was painful. Because listen, just as a Steeler fan, let me tell you, the Steelers had a rough time before this game. The Steelers were having a rough time in the playoffs. They had kind of caught the Buffalo Bill playoff juggernaut a little bit as Bill Cowher was trying to revitalize the team. They kind of caught the Buffalo Bill dominance in the AFC a little bit. And then they had a moment where they had a really, really good team in 1994 and did not make it to the Super Bowl. They lost to San Diego in the AFC title game at home. The next year, they again had a very good team. The year they went and played Dallas, but the AFC title game, the Indianapolis Colts, led by Jim Harbaugh, played right to them. In fact, Aaron Bailey was in the end zone when Jim Harbaugh launched a pass in the final seconds. It was incomplete. Otherwise, the Steelers would have blown two AFC title games. But I was not confident that the Steelers could beat the Dallas Cowboys, but I knew the Steelers had a really good team. And that's where the pain of this game kind of fit for me, was the fact that, yes, Dallas went out. They were leading 13-0 before the Steelers got a touchdown and made it 13-7. But it was a 13-0 lead, and it really did look like Dallas was going to be in control and win this game. And at one point, it was 20-7 before the Steelers started climbing back into this. But I look back on this and say, yes, did Dallas beat Pittsburgh? Yes. Was Dallas a better team? Probably. But when you have a quarterback that threw those kind of interceptions and those kind of situations where it wasn't even close and Larry Brown didn't even do anything, just had to stand there and just receive a pass, that's when those losses sting. Because let me tell you, there was even a rumor that Neil O'Donnell was throwing this game. It was so obvious. It was a tough Super Bowl to take. It was a really, really, really tough loss to swallow, because you felt like when it got to 20-17 and the Steelers were driving, and then boom, and another turnover, Emmitt Smith scores. It's a 10-point lead, and that's pretty much it. But for Dallas, this is the last time they were in a Super Bowl. This was the last Super Bowl title they had. I know Jerry Jones says he's been surprised. It's been 20 years since the last Cowboy championship. Think of all the coaches. Think of all the situations that Dallas has been in 20 years. It's very, 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 very hard to believe that the Dallas Cowboys, who, if you go through the Super Bowl history, you know, don't really have long periods of time where they weren't in a Super Bowl. I know that they weren't in the 80s, but the, 70s they were in, and this was a moment where you felt like, okay, the Cowboys are kind of back. They're back into this thing, and it's been 20 years since they won it again. But Pittsburgh Steelers losing Super Bowl 30 and the Dallas Cowboys picking up their third in 4 years. All right, coming up next in the next hour, two All-Star games coming up this weekend. They both kind of stink. Which one stinks more? Plus, Adam has seen Making a Murderer on Netflix. We will talk about that next hour, Yahoo Sports Radio.